हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। जय श्री श्रीमद् भागवतम चैप्टर वन नो कैंटो वन चैप्टर वन वर्स 3। वी कंटिन्यूइंग विथ एक्सर्प्ट फ्रॉम Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. Tiny Ta. Thank you. So then, according to Sridhar Swami, Sarva Gasyatmanaha means that Vishnu is the shelter of even the impersonal Brahman. Sarva Gasya. This can, so that means sarva gasyat manaha. So he's the atma of the Brahman, right? So he's the basis of this. This confirms what the Lord Himself says: Brahmano hi pratishtaham. Vishnu Dharma, in describing Naraka Dwadasi, says, Vasudeva is situated as the soul of all things in Prakriti, the Purusha, and the Brahman. Right? So. He is the basis, because you see, is he is the person that you're means he's the person that's effulgent, right? Because you can say is no, it's the effulgence first, but the point is where does the effulgence come from? Effulgence means it's effulgence of something that is effulgent. You know, you have the effulgent and the effulgence, like that. You know, it's just how language works. So he is the basis. So it's his qualities, right? Because he has unlimited qualities, therefore the Brahman is unlimited. If he had, you know, unlimited qualities, the Brahman would be limited, right? You know, so that's the point, is how much he, so therefore it's unlimited, and everything is based on qualities, right? Everything is based on the qualities of the Lord. So the Brahman is then the basis of the existence of everything, because the unlimited qualities that he has, those are the basis of the existence of anything else. Right? That's the whole point. So one has to appreciate that it's the person first. Right? Right? Like that. So that's the point. So it's the, I say, person first, samadhi later. You know, like that, the Brahman later, right? So it has that point, is that it comes from there. We're used to looking at it because we're looking at the inductive kind of aspect from our perspective. So you go up, you're in the material world, you by piety you increase your position in the material world, you get to higher and higher realms, then you can cross beyond that out of the material to the Brahman. And then, you know, then if we're thinking, okay, then there's Paramatma, then there's Bhagavan. But the point is that may be the path we're going through, but you only make it to Bhagavan because it's Bhagavan who's the basis of everything. Otherwise, how would you go beyond that? Right. So therefore, he's the soul of all things, right? In Prakriti. So that means everything in the material, the Purusha. Right, so that means the Purusha avatars and everything, and the Brahman. So he's the basis of everything. That's the point. Also, Vishnu Dharma, in describing Maskarksha worship, no, Masarksha worship, says, well, what's that, Masarksha? Just as Achyuta, Paramatma, is superior to all others, he is superior to Brahman. Therefore, unlimited Achyuta, you should fulfill my wish and remove me from all dangers. Vishnu Dharma 2613. Oh, excuse me, 2613. I think here's Vishnu Dharma means the Vishnu Dharmotra, like that. I think it's just they call it that. In Harivamsa, the Lord says to Arjuna, in the story where Mahavishnu steals the sun sons of the Brahmana. The supreme Brahman spreads throughout the whole universe. O Bharata, understand that Brahman is my condensed effulgence. Right? Because so the point is that when you're talking about Brahman, it means the impersonal aspect. It just means it's generic. It doesn't mean that it doesn't come from the person. Right? That's the point. It's just like, let's say you're meeting somebody, you know, a friend or just whatever, and it's somehow or another things have been went really well for them, or they're very happy. You see they're like effulgent. And then if they're unhappy, they're very dark. Right? So because Krishna is always blissful because he's always on, you know, on that transcendental platform. Therefore, that effulgence is just the effulgence of his qualities. And because you can say qualities themselves are generic, so then the Brahman is generic. And then you can say, well, how can you get things from Brahman? Because the point is it's the genericness. You have a table, it has the potency to hold things up. So that quality, it comes from Brahman. Right, that there's something existence is coming from Brahman. Then it may be specific as a particular table. So you always have this feature of the generic and the specific, right? So you get it there as you have the impersonal and then the personal. Like if you say, oh, okay, you know, all this group of this demographic of people is like this. Then, oh, that's impersonal. But it doesn't mean that it's not there. And then there's the personal theirs, because all those qualities are manifest through the personal. Right? So then you're going to see is that it's manifest. The energies are manifest. So that's it. It's Brahman. Those generic qualities are the energy, but it's generic rather than specific. But they become specific. How do they become specific? Then that's happening specific because of Paramatma, right? Right. So Paramatma, he's controlling these energies. Brahman is just the existence, his existence as just the, you know, his, you know, condensed effulgence of himself and that existence and those qualities. And then Paramatma, you know, controls those qualities and those energies. And then you get all the various manifestations, right? So then it's still going to come. So you can say, the personal here comes from Brahman. But the point is Brahman comes from the person. Otherwise, how does the Brahman have the ability to create something personal, right? You know, that's the point. They're looking at it just from here is that you have clay, and from clay you can make a pot. Okay, so from the formless you get the form. And you can say as the principle of clay is there manifest, you know, it's you can say it's just inherent in the clay, but it becomes manifest as the pot and it has certain qualities, right? But it's based on what the qualities of the clay is. But the point is the clay, that potency is controlled by Krishna, by Paramatma, right? So therefore, it's still coming from the person. It's the person who has those qualities that you see. So some of his qualities are in the clay, you know, in the earth, some in the water, some in the fire, some in the air, some in the ether, you know, then the mind, the intelligence, the ego, right? The consciousness, these things, that means those qualities are all there in him. And so for us, when you see them all connected to Krishna, then they all take on the transcendental position, right? Without Krishna, then you see you have anamoy, where the consciousness is about yourself and your senses, right? The body identification. Then you extend that to accompany other people's bodily position. Though generally, pranamoy is you see the life in all others, but also there's the tendency to just see, you know, your particular group, right? And that, and then you go farther, then you see the laws of nature and all that, then you get, you know, that this is how it is, then you can see is the groups of things, okay, this group works like this, that, like that, because you accept it according to the laws of Krishna, right? Then you're seeing that, well, the soul's beyond all this, so then that brings you to Vijnanamoy, but then the point is the soul is then part and parcel of the Lord, that brings you to Ananda. But now, if you're on that platform of Anandamoy, then the senses, all other people, the positions or the qualities governing all else and the spiritual platform on which you always act, that it's not for material things, then they're all just subservient to Ananda Maya. Right? Does that make sense? So that way all other things, earth, that there's some side, gives all the shape to things, you know, it gives, the water has all those qualities, the air, the fire, but they're all just part of the Lord's pastimes. So they don't take on a quality, no, you have to get through all this means. We may be going up through all this because we're trying to develop the uncover the consciousness by the devotional process, and that then removes the dust on the mirror of the mind, right? Because the mind is reflecting. That's what we're doing. We can reflect the qualities. You know, it's just like, let us say, on a a musical instrument, then you have the main strings. Then they also have these secondary strings. And if you tune the secondary strings properly, then whenever you play the main string, then the ones that are tuned to that particular note will vibrate, you know, like that. It means, let's say you're playing the first, so whatever strings are tuned to the first will vibrate. But at the same time, it also creates a vibration, a lighter vibration in the fifth, because the first and fifth always have the tonal quality of them. And I've seen someone show that they tune it and everything, and it'll also give, you know, a slight from the fourth, and a slight, some of the other ones that are not disharmonious with it. I think the third and the seventh, like that, they'll also be lighter there. So you get this whole array. So you see is that it's Krishna's qualities, but they're all connected. They have relationships. So one devotee has a particular manifesting certain qualities of Krishna, but those go with other devotees that have, you know, ones that are compatible with that. And so that goes together as a whole pastime. They all have that kind of proper mood, right? So you're going to see is that why it says in the Chaito Darpana Marjanam, because Lord Chaitanya is saying you're cleansing the mirror of the mind. So then if the mirror is clean, then you can properly reflect those qualities of Krishna, because we're part and parcel of Krishna. So it means the qualities are coming from him. Right, then we can reflect that, or we see in that song, I think it's Narottam Das Thakur, the Sri Rupa Manjari Pada. He's mentioning about Rupa Goswami's then qualities are, you know, so wonderful and effulgent that they come and then, you know, they reflect from us back to him. So then you see that we're able to engage in nice activities, nice services, you know, serving under the devotees, serving Krishna. But those qualities that we're manifesting are actually coming from the devotees, right? Because they're the ones in perfectly in tune, and then we can be in tune with them, and that way then we are. So then you technically could have, you know, the more strings you put and all this and that, then that makes the main one, that makes others. I think I've even seen it where they've just tuned a bunch of instruments and they play on the one and the main string plays loud, the secondary strings play quite loud. But the instrument that's next to it also, because if it's played loud enough, then they get even a slight shadow like that. But it's coming from there. That's the point. It's not, it means, so the qualities that we have will resonate with that. If we have it in line with that, so then we see that reflection. Does that make sense? So when you are reflecting, then you're reflecting properly. But otherwise, if there's dust, you don't get much. Like if you go in the room, there's that. You can kind of see that there's kind of a bit of a shape there, but you can't really see anything. You know, just like, let's say, in the morning after the shower, that if there's some, mist in the thing, you can tell that you're standing in front of the mirror because there's kind of a bit of a shadow there, but you don't really get what the details are. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole point. Everything's based on Krishna. And so then when that's understood, then, because the importance of that, because we could say, this is just all Brahman. It doesn't mean, you know, we're just devotees. But then that means, no, everything's connected to Krishna. There isn't anything that's not. So then if you can't appreciate the element of the Brahman and all that, then you may not be able to appreciate how that Brahman being Krishna is in everything and makes everything work. So whatever quality it is in the things that you see around you and that you have a value in, that's only doing what it does because it's Krishna. That's all. And that we relate to it because we're part and parcel of Krishna. So that's the thing, is that it's simultaneously one with Krishna and different. You know, just like Krishna is saying in the Chaturshloki, that he is everything and he's in control of everything. And if you don't see whatever you value, whatever it is, connected to Krishna, then you're an illusion because you're thinking it's something else. So you don't see it connected to Krishna, you'll think it's material energy. So then it's just, there's material energy, then there's the spiritual. You only get that, what do you call it, binary kind of understanding. But no, it's that there's only Krishna. There's superior and there's inferior. You know, it's just like you have a big mansion and big grounds that all belongs to whoever's house it is. But then out in the back, there might be, you know, some kind of workshop or this or that, and it's of inferior quality to the main house and the grounds and the gardens and all that, but it's still part of the whole thing. You can't say it's, oh, because it's inferior or that, it doesn't belong to the guy who's there, therefore I can take over this workshop and make it mine. No, like that. I mean, people try that all the time, but yeah. So the difference here is Krishna's still in charge, right? Right, you know, so we may be squatters, but he's still in charge. Right. I say, my God, squatters in the sojourn of life. Right. No, okay. Yeah, okay. Then Brahma Samhita says, I worship the Supreme Lord Govinda, whose powerful form radiates effulgence known as the undifferentiated, unlimited, all-encompassing Brahman, which is completely distinct from its powers displayed in unlimited planets throughout billions of universe. Brahma Samhita 540. Right, so, which is completely distinct from its powers displayed. So that means the Brahman, I worship Krishna, whose powerful form, yeah, so radiates effulgence, and then his form is completely distinct from the powers that are displayed. So even though all these powers come from him, and the Brahman, his form is still distinct from that. So you can see his form and Brahman. You can see the effulgence, right? It's not that we get where, you know, there's the form, and then there's the effulgence. We don't see in the paintings that there's Krishna, and then kind of at the edge, it starts to disappear and everything like that. It's taking on the qualities of this, and then it kind of fades out. And no, it's distinct, but non-different, right? Is that, yeah, like that. So, yeah. And the Shruti text, Gopal Tapani Upanishad says, I offer repeated respects to Krishna, who is beyond the states of waking, dreaming, deep sleep, and the Brahman. Yeah. So he's beyond these levels of consciousness, of states of existence, right? So then waking means you're aware of what's around you, the senses, sense objects, mind, everything can interact. Dreaming means then the gross body and senses aren't involved. It's just the mind and with the memories that you're putting together in various weird ways, you know, like, you know, how you say, inspired kids at with their breakfast cereals and, you know, putting different things together and, hey, you know, we could put some jam in here like that. What about some Marmite? You know, like that, you know, so they could do all kinds of stuff, you know. Yeah. And then deep sleep means where they're unconscious, and then Brahman then will be that the state on which all this is based, because you're waking, dreaming, and deep sleep on the platform of Brahman. So when you talk about the spiritual platform, that's Brahman. It means that's what you're situated on. Just like you could say, you're doing service in the temple, but you're standing on the floor, right? But that doesn't mean that the floor is the basis of everything. You know, although if you're situated in Vermont, then that's the source. And because of that, you can do service and there's all the pastimes. So Vermont is the main. It'd be like saying that the temple room floor is the main. And then all these other things are expansions of the floor and all that. No, it's because there's the deities. Therefore, then there's the altar, there's the deity room. Then there's the temple room. There's, you know, the temple room has roof and doors and windows and all that. That's because of the deities. Right, the deities move. It's not a temple room anymore. Right, it's not a temple. So that's the. So, yeah, we're good. So the personal aspect always has to be seen. That's the primary. Right, and then you have from that. Then its other features is the Paramatma and Brahman. Like that. So it goes that way, not the other way. We may perceive it that way. We may, when we're going up towards Krishna, be going from our sinful position up to a more pious position, up to a more detached position and understanding the spiritual, and then we, you know, then appreciate the transcendental. So that may be how we go up through these things as we purify. Because basically, if you're cleaning the mirror, at first, you know, you don't really see anything, you know, depending on how bad it is, you know, and as you start wiping, then, you know, you start getting a bit of a blur and then it gets a little bit better and then this and that. And then, you know, you can see the form and it's a bit foggy. And then, you know, you have to get out either whatever it is, spray stuff and your, what do you call it? Your newspaper, like that. And then you get the nice bright, you know, so like that. So you can say is prema is when it's fully, you know, clean like that, but you can see pretty good in Baba. Yeah, it just doesn't have that sparkle, you know, that twinkle in the eye and the spring in the step and like that. So that all comes when you get to that platform. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes. No. Okay. Then verses 4 to 23. The sages of Naimisharanya inquire from Sutta Goswami. In this section, the narration of the Bhagavatam. So basically what we said is now we finished the you could say the introduction or the means the Mangalacharan. So it has you we see it covered all the different parts. It talked about Krishna, you know, who's the deity. Then it talked about what they're doing. It was about pure devotional service. Then they talked about, you know, who's qualified. We see the those who appreciate the Lord, the Rasikas, you know, that Rasamalayam, you know, and then what you can get from it. You can taste the Lord and the name, form, qualities, pasta. You can have a taste for that, and that will take you beyond transcendental to the material arrangement. So that's all been described in these first, and we can see is of these Mangalacharans, you could probably say this is the most refined Mangalacharan that you'll find in any of the Vedic literatures. That it brings, it's so exact, so clear. It's about pure devotional service. What is favorable, what's not, you know, right there. All sub-religions are kicked out. You know, it means it's the transcendental, so it means it's sad-dharma is what's accepted. And dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, if they're in connection with sad-dharma, it's accepted. If not, it's cheating, right? Because it is, you could say, the religious nature of, you know, the what's going on by Krishna's laws, but it's cheating because that's not what the living entity is supposed to do, right? That's not their business. So then it brings out, so then someone who appreciates that, then that is the qualification, and then one can be situated on that platform, and, you know, yes. So the fine details of there of Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana, then it gives a very full array. And so having done that, now we start at the beginning. Like that. Then you have the, what is it? Something? Namishay Chaitre. That's that verse that starts, you know, that once upon a time at Naimisharanya, then you have the sages sitting there, and then in walks Sutta Goswami, and then, yeah. In this section, the narration of the Bhagavatam begins in the holy place of Naimisharanya, where the great sages first glorify Srila Suta Goswami, the speaker of the Bhagavatam, and then begin inquiring from him. The sages begin by posing three questions. Then they glorify the chanting and hearing about the Lord, and request Suta to speak to them about the Lord and his incarnations. After Suta describes that the age of Kali has just begun, the sages then ask a final sixth question. Now that Sri Krishna, the absolute truth, the master of all mystic powers, has departed for his abode, please tell us by whom religious principles are presently protected. Right? So then they begin, then they you know, so these questions are asked, and then that sets the basis where that's what the Bhagavatam will be about, because they've asked these six questions, and now Suta Goswami will spend, you know, the rest of the Bhagavatam explaining that, right? And then, you know, in that, then everything unfolds. And as they go, then there's further questions. So that will then refine the movement of how they're going through the discussion, right? It means if you say something and everyone understands everything, it just continues as how you have less an idea. Okay, I'm gonna go through the conversation like this. And if everybody understands as it goes, you know, just as you're saying it, they catch, then you may just go through all that just as it is, you know, like that you are planning. But if in there's some question or something, or they're trying to connect something, then they'll ask a question. Then you're still going to go through all those things, but then you're going to get into more detail in a particular area. And then that brings up some questions, but you know what you're trying to say, and they're asking questions that you go, so they don't have a problem that they get distracted, you know, like we'll get something like that and go into something, and then we end up somewhere out in left field, and we're trying to figure out left field, and yeah, I guess for you that's left field, but okay, so it works. Yeah. And so and then you wonder, where were we? How did we get here? So Suta Goswami, Sukadev Goswami don't have these problems. They don't forget like that. So it always that it brings it around in that. And also how they're telling and the qualifications of the sages. So that's why we have their conversation documented, because, you know, it goes very well. You know, that's why he doesn't say one day down at the, you know, cat and crocodile, then, you know, some blokes, you know, walked in and, you know, sallied up to the bar. And then, you know, after, you know, how you say, inquiring from the bartender about this and that, then, you know, one of them started, you know, telling him, lamenting about his life and that. And then the bartender started to speak. And yeah. So we don't see that, the bartender Upanishad or something, you know. So yeah, we don't have that. So we stick to, it's always the great sages and like that. So that's why you see generally in the conversations, it's always, you know, the transcendental personalities, the great sages, maybe the great kings, the Rajarshis, like that, because then you have a basis of commonality of discussion. You know, because otherwise then it might be, okay, all this and that, and then, you know, after all this, and then there's someone, oh, yeah, so what's that? You know, what time's lunch today? And it's like that, yeah, so, yeah. Verses 4 through 8, setting the scene. Some 5,000 years ago, shortly after the disappearance of Lord Krishna, an assembly of great sages headed by Shonaka Rishi began an extensive series of sacrifices at Naimisharanya Forest. The sacred site of these yagyas was the hub of a great wheel that had been contemplated by Lord Brahma to encompass the entire universe. The holy forest of Naimisharanya had been selected by the sages because of their compassionate desire to do good for the people who would be born in the coming age of Kali. They understood that when sacrifice is performed there, demoniac persons, powers, and influences are subdued. Right? Because we see is that one is Naimisharanya is the hub of the universe, right? Because the whole universe is turning, right? Because you always have to have, there's always movement, you know, time. And in that way, then you also get the variety, because it was always exactly the same every time then the living entities might get, bored of it. I mean, you do something a million lifetimes, so you get bored of it, right? So therefore we see everything's moving. So the whole thing is moving, and then in that other things are moving, and like it's like watching like a clockworks, the summer going really fast and summer going really, really slow and things like that. Yeah. They also knew that the only, and at this time, I think Naimisharanya is the holy place for the primary holy place in Dwapara Yuga. Right? I think in Satya Yuga, it's Kurukshetra. Then, and then Treta. Because Kali is Mayapur. Chaitanya's place. Oh, we were just reading that the other day. Was it one of these? No, it might have been in Bhishma's. I don't know if it's that might be. Might be Ayodhya. Unless it's Haridwar. But I don't remember. It was one of those, oh yeah, that's obvious. And then, then immediately you forget, right? It's so obvious that you don't have to write it down. And so then, of course, then you forget. Yeah. They also knew that the only practical sacrifice during Kali Yuga is the Sankirtana Yajna, the chanting and hearing of the holy name and glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Shaunaka Rishi and all the other great sages were determined to hear Krishna Katha for 1,000 years, just to set the example for the population of this fallen age. One day, when their morning duties were complete, including an Agnihotra Yajna performance, right? Because they'll have the particular duties they do in the morning. It's like your sadhana. Like we'll get up, take our bath, do our chanting and all that, and whatever we're doing is that. Then you have the day, and then you'll have things that you'll do in the evening. So, in here, then in the Vedic thing, it'll be centered around the yajna. Right, because the yajna in the morning and the yajna in the evening, and so then all the other things will be connected there. So either you're doing the yajna, just before, during, or after the sunrise. So it might be before, during, or after. So depending upon what other elements of your sadhana are there, then you will adjust it. And so accordingly in the evening also. So then they would do around that. So that's how you see is that. Here, there's a yajna going on, and then they're having the discussion. Or let's say, like the Ramayana, that would have been discussed, and they were doing a yajna in the breaks that are there, right? Like we said, they have the morning, they have the evening, and so then in the breaks, that's when they're going to have the discussion. So it'd be after the morning, you have some discussions, and then break for lunch, some rest, then start in the evening again discussing. Then you'd have the evening yajna, and if they continue after that. Or the Mahabharata, that's at the snake sacrifice. So then at the interim period between the morning and evening yajna, then that's when they'd be discussing Mahabharata. Right? Does that make sense? And so those are the ones that is, then Vyasadeva then documents those, right? The Rishis... Okay, one day when their morning duties were complete, including an Agnihotra Yajna performance, the Rishis very respectfully seated Srila Suta Goswami. Upon the Vyasasana. And humbly submitted the following inquiries. The Rishi said, O Suta, no vice taints you. You have attained complete enlightenment in your study and recitation of the Itihasas, Puranas and Dharma Shastras. All this is due to the mercy of your spiritual masters, which abides in you by your qualification as an ideal submissive disciple. So that's in verses 4 through 8, then describe all that. In his purport to 118, Srila Prabhupada explains why Srila Suta Goswami has been chosen to speak the Bhagavatam. The secret of success in spiritual life is in satisfying the spiritual master and thereby getting his sincere blessings. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has sung in his famous 8 stanzas on the spiritual master as follows.
I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master. Only by his satisfaction can one please the personality of Godhead, and when he is dissatisfied, there is only havoc on the path of spiritual realization. It is essential, therefore, that a disciple be very much obedient and submissive to the bona fide spiritual master. Srila Suta Goswami fulfilled all these qualifications as a disciple, and therefore he was endowed with all favors by his learned and self-realized spiritual masters, such as Srila Vyasa, Dev, and others. The sages of Naimisharanya were confident that Srila Suta Goswami was bona fide. Therefore, they were anxious to hear from him. Right, so the point is, if you're not a good disciple, you can't be, you can't lead the other way. It's just like if you don't know how to eat, you can't cook or serve. Right, you have to know all the different things. And if you can't properly serve, you actually don't know how to eat or what to cook. You know, so they all go together. So being a proper disciple, then you can be a proper leader. But otherwise, it's not that, oh, it's just by position you have power and all that. Yes, that's there for, you can say, the bureaucrats. You have an individual who has a skill. He can do the bureaucratic work, but he doesn't have any power to accomplish the work that his department does. It's only by the power of, you know, the government or, you know, the business or whatever it is that he's working under that it's there. He himself does not have that, and it's not expected that he has to have that. He just has to be good at his secretarial work that he does, right? Because that's basically what they are as a bureaucrat means. They know how to deal with secretarial stuff and, you know, talk and apply it into particular, diplomatic and, social scenes. That's what they're for. That's what they do. So it's an important part of the system, but they're not leaders on any stretch of the imagination, right? So, you know, for others, maybe amongst themselves, they'll be, you know, he's the bureaucrat of bureaucrats, you know, like that. And so others will be, you know, inspired by how bureaucratic he is, and, you know, how to improve our bureaucratness. Yeah, like that. Yeah. So, you know, that's there. But the point is here is that you've heard, therefore you can lead. Right. So because there is power there that's been invested by, you know, some higher authority, then it's taken that, oh, yes, we're leading, we can do this, we can do, or a bunch of bureaucrats get together and they decide they can lead. But no, you have to have higher principles to work that on. Just like the kings and the Brahmins are working on higher principles. They have to have a metric by which to decide what is right and what is wrong. And so, and in that, because they're dealing with the personal aspect, they have to see the broad range of what they're dealing with. Right, the Kshatriyas, you know, at least in how all this there and that it connects up to something higher. The Brahmins then have to see how this all connects the Shastras to each other and that to the Brahman, like that. And then for the Vaishnavas, how it all connects to Krishna. Right, so for the devotees, then they see everything connected to Krishna in that way, like we mentioned before, is that then Brahma, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra are not on, you know, it's not a technically a hierarchy. It's just what service you're engaging in, Krishna service. So it's all considered transcendental, right? Like that. But that doesn't mean that it mechanically doesn't have a hierarchy. You know, it's just like we're engaging something in Krishna service. So therefore, it's a codicil, right? And so you always come up with some cooking thing, and it always is something that's not for a codicil. Okay. Let's say you have, pardon the pun on words, but you have a karai and you have some paneer, right? For those of you who know, there's a preparation in India called karai paneer. You know, it means a pot and the paneer. So you know, it's pot paneer. That doesn't mean that they grind up pot and that makes a green sauce. That's called palak paneer, where they grind up spinach and make that like that. Yeah. And so then, you know, can say as well, without the pot, then, you know, you wouldn't have the cooked paneer. So the pot's the most important and all that. But no, it's a support. It may be doing some of all the work, but it's the basis. Just like without the floor, you don't move around in the room. But it's not the floor is the cause of your doing all these different wonderful things that people are writing about in history and everything like that. No, it's just that's the problem is we take what's the volume and that's the real thing. You know, like so no. It's the quality of what you're doing, right? So therefore, because there is the volume of the of this position and all that, but here you see it's based on, no, they're a perfect disciple, therefore they can be a perfect teacher. That's how it works. So just because you're good at one thing doesn't mean you're at another. So in here you have to know is he's a good disciple, therefore he can be a good teacher, right? It doesn't mean that he's a good disciple, you know, of Vyasadeva, and therefore he can win gold in cross country, you know, what is it, Ironman, bicycle contest, right? Does that make sense? You know, it says you have to know what the category. So in the same way as we're saying, just because someone has a position, it's because of the position they have power. Like Indra doesn't have the power. It comes from the feet of Indra. Like in, it's one of the famous verses in Chandogya Upanishad that where someone comes to Indra and is asking questions and says, well, how do I attain this? He's talking about the absolute. So how do I attain this absolute? And so Indra, the person is saying, you have to worship Indra, but he doesn't mean himself. He means the Indra or the actual king by which he gets his powers. So he's meaning you have to worship Vishnu. That's how you get to the transcendental platform, right? So that's the thing. But otherwise, they'll say, no, he's saying that you have to worship him. You know, so therefore, worship the demigods or by worshiping yourself, then you attain this. No, it's by worshiping Vishnu. So So they see he is bona fide. He learned nicely. He did everything very nice, study under his spiritual master. And therefore, then he's able to speak all these things very, very nicely. So now, like that, the Itihasas, Puranas, and Dharma Shastras, right? Because these are what are spoken. Because even Mahabharata is spoken by Suta Goswami to the sages at Naimisharanya, right? And so also all the 18 Puranas, they're all Suta Goswami speaking to the sages at Naimisharanya headed by Shonaka. You know, that's how they're all like that. So that Mahabharata is Itihas, Purana is then, you know, the basis of all those, because Purana is all the histories, Itihas is specific history on a particular person. And the Dharma Shastras, they'll be connected because what is being shown is how people are engaging themselves properly in Dharma and how the benefits and they're uplifted by that, or those who don't follow Dharma, like Duryodhana, how it doesn't go very well for him. You know, it's like that. Also like Ravana, you know, Hiranyakashipu, things didn't go well like that because they didn't follow the Dharma like that. But then we see is that's for the unique thing that or the specialness, although they all talk about or will be pointing to the idea of sad dharma, but the idea there is that you've mentioned it, and then people go, "Oh, wow, what's that? You've talked about all this. Is wonderful. That, what's this more?" But unfortunately, people aren't asking, right? So, you know, it's like the Mahabharata is there, the Pandavas are there, they're doing all the pastimes, they're interacting with Krishna, you know, they're doing all the things that they do. But is anybody asking? Asking from reading Mahabharata, well, how do I develop devotion to Krishna like the Pandavas have for Krishna? Have you ever heard one Hindu ask that question? Any forum, any discussion? Never. That's Narad Muni's point. Right? His point is that you've said this, but you haven't said it directly, that they just go by volume. Right? Generally, people go by volume. What's talked about more, that's why in the Vedas, sometimes things are repeated. Because it's repeated, then you'll take it seriously. Oh, okay, this is So, yeah. Again. He's the disciple. Mahabharata. Oh, yeah. So then Bhagavatam is directly saying, right in the introduction, bang, it just says right there, it's about pure, anything other than the pure devotional service is kicked out. And so being kicked out, then okay, what's left? Pure devotional service. Right? If anything other than pure devotional service is kicked out, that means all that's going to be left is devotional service. You know, pure devotional service. So that's the whole idea. Right? So they were anxious to hear from him because he can explain that. Right? So that's what's special about the Bhagavatam, and they're wanting to hear that. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura elaborates in his commentary on the same verse, this 118. Vidam refers to persons who know. Paravara vidaha means persons who know both the Brahman with qualities and without qualities. Guru should speak the secret to the disciple who has affection, snigdhasya, for the gurus. This is in the potential and thus express the following idea. Right, so he's pointing out that they speak the secret to the disciple who has affection right here. So the paravaravidaha means one who knows that Brahman with qualities and without qualities. Right. So in other words, when we talk about Brahman, we say it's the effulgence of his qualities, but you don't see the qualities manifest. That's why it's just called Brahman. Right? Where those things are manifest, then you'll see that that's in connection with the Lord's pastimes, either the transcendental pastimes or the Boma Lila or his, you know, pastimes as the Purusha, as the creation, maintenance, and destruction, like that. Then you see the manifestations, like when we saw Krishna glances, and then he's has form. He glances, but that form, that glance has no form, and then it becomes form. Right? Because then you're switching from him, you know, the Brahman, and then into Shiva. Right? The Sadashi aspect of Sadashiva. Right? So you know both. You can deal with both. You can deal with this, the platform, and then there's what's on plan. So Prabhupada talks about it as spiritual and transcendental. Much of the time, if you're talking in a general thing or just about one, you're not comparing the two, then using either spiritual or transcendental are synonyms. And that you're using it like this. But then if you're talking about coming to the spiritual platform, you're talking about getting off the material platform onto the spiritual. But what will you do there? Then you'll do transcendental activities in connection with Krishna. Right? So it can be used as two levels of the same thing. So they're both talking about the same thing. One's talking about your situation, on the platform of transcendence, which is the spiritual. And then the transcendence would be talking about the activities, right? But it can also be, you know, as he said, transcendence means you transcend the material, so you come to the spiritual. But you're going to perform the activities. So spiritual means it's not material, right? It's on the platform of Brahman. The transcendental then will indicate the personal. So basically, you can say is that either one will refer to Krishna or refer to Brahman, depending on which quality you're looking at. But if you're comparing them, then transcendental means Bhagavan and spiritual mean that platform of Brahman, Paramatma, like that kind of aspect. Okay, this is in the potential and thus expresses the following idea. Since you are a disciple, having affection for your gurus, they must certainly have revealed the secret to you, and you must have understood all those confidential subjects. While rejecting sages who extract their own ideas from all these confidential topics and then speak, we are asking you, the speaker of all authorized doctrines, about these subjects. Right? So, in other words, he has that potential is there because he's served nicely, right, in a proper way that with affection his gurus. Therefore, the potential is there that. The gurus seeing that and being affectionate in return then will reveal all the details of the transcendental position. And so therefore we've rejected all those people who are just the great saints and sages who are gyanis, you know, or these munis, because they inject their own idea. That's the whole point. Muni means he has his own idea, right? And so that's what you see. So when you're dealing with scholarliness, that's always the point. It has to be your own idea. It's unique. It's different. It's something. So in the Vedic, then they would have their own philosophy. And the modern one is you have your own, what do you call it? Your own particular PhD. No one else on the planet could have done like that. You know, even though you're doing your PhD on the, you know, how you say tsetse fly of, you know, the central Congo, but someone else has done it on the, on, you know, the, those that are more on the northern side, you know, in the Congo, specifically around the Victoria Falls, that those tsetse flies. And so then you're the world expert. So they have to do something that's completely, that no one else has done, you know, no living entity has ever gone there before, you know, so, like this, so they can speculate. And then, unfortunately, because they are smart, they think they can speculate on anything and everything. It gives them a right, but actually, no, you don't, you know, as is evidenced by the discussion between the boatman and the scholar, you know, like the scholar is on a boat. He knows all these topics and all that, but he doesn't know how to swim. So when the boat sinks, then, you know, everything's lost. Like kind of like, how do you say, ou de toi, cat sank. Yeah. So it's a problem. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Verses 9 to 11, questions 1 and 2. What is the absolute and ultimate good for people in general? What is the essence of all scriptures? Right? So this is verses 9 to 11. So this is question 1 and 2. What is the absolute and ultimate good for the people in general? Because absolute means it always has to be true. And at the same time, the same, the ultimate good. Because within absolute, then you might have some other apps, what's ultimate in that, because you're going to have variety, right? Because otherwise the impersonalist is just, you're going for the absolute, and that's good. But for the devotees, then you want to know within absolute, what's the ultimate good? And what is the essence of all scriptures? Because it'll be naturally connection, because then the scriptures, the essence of scripture should be talking about what is absolute, what's the ultimate good, right? The sages said, our request that you, at this sacrifice, is that you kindly explain to us what you have ascertained to be the absolute and ultimate good for the people in general. Right? So, means, in other words, he studied the scriptures under his gurus in a submissive way, with affection, and therefore then he has been, these things have been revealed. So how is he, you know, what is his realization of this? Right? Because it's going to be higher than the sages. Right, so anytime you have the material scholars, then they're just going to speculate. It's their own idea of what it is, and people will take a position because it makes them unique. Right, you're going to have that person who, yes, you know, everybody's saying like this, and there's evidence for that, but I'm going to say something different because that makes me stand out. And it's so like this then. The discussion carries on for as long as they're in a position or in the chair or alive. And once they're dead, then the next guys come in and throw that out because that was a waste of, you know, 30 years, and moves on. So now they have a new thing to waste your time on. You know, how you say. I said, we're tired of wasting our time on this useless discussion. We want a new useless discussion to waste our time with. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, after hearing the request of the sages, Srila Suta Goswami said, you should hear everything from my mouth. Then you can decide what is best, right? So he's saying, I will explain what I've, you know, understood, and then you can, from that, ascertain. So he's taking the humble position. I can't tell you, you know, I don't know. I can just tell you what I've learned, like that. Like that. So how you say, and you know, so even for ourselves, we don't know, but Srila Prabhupada said, And he's bringing us, showing how what is being said by the Acharyas. So we can simply say what they've said. We won't come up with our own ideas that, oh no, times have changed, everything's different, you can't do all those things like they used to do and everything like that. You know, it's like before they were eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, and now it's 2025 or, you know, 2030 or 2000 or, you know, 1965 or, you know, like that. And it's the dawning of the age of Aquarius. And so it's different. And so we have to see what is there, and it's all changed. We can't do any of that anymore. You know, so people nowadays don't eat, sleep, mate, or defend, right? And if you go back 100 years, they were kind of doing it, but not as much as they were before, right? You know, I mean, you should have seen the eating, sleeping, mating, and defending was going on with that protozoa when the lightning bolt hit the primordial soup. Man, that guy was going for it, right? He was just seawater all this time, and just minerals and all that just washing around. Then when he got zapped by the lightning, and he took on his own particular individual consciousness and personality, man, he went for it because he's got the whole ocean. Nothing else is there. There's no whales there that are going to come along, what do you call it? You know, siphon them through their little, you know, what there's that one kind of whales that do that. And so him, the ocean is his oyster, and oysters aren't even there yet. So it's even more his than, you know, that, you know. So yeah, no, you know, and then as you go, it starts changing, gets less and less and less, you know. Yeah. Okay. The sages replied in verses 10 to 11, in this Kali Yuga, men have very short lives, and they are quarrelsome, lazy, misguided, unlucky, and above all, always disturbed. And pretty much summarizes it up. Okay, very short lives, because they're living 1,000 years, right? You know, at least, unless they're there from before, they might have been whatever. And so very short lives, not even short lives, very short lives, right? You know, so they are quarrelsome, right? Lazy, misguided, right? It's like, what was it? I think it was Mark Twain said, if you don't read the news, you're uninformed. And if you read the news, you're misinformed. Right? Yeah. Misguided, unlucky, right? Things just don't go. One of those great sages said, if it wasn't for bad luck, I'd have no luck at all. Like that. And above all, always disturbed. Always, not sometimes. Like sometimes they might be having longer, shorter lives. Sometimes they might be more or less quarrelsome. Sometimes more or less lazy. You know, it depends on how thirsty you are. Are you going to get up and walk to the fridge and get something to drink? Misguided, you know, how misguided, you know, like that. How unlucky. But above all, always disturbed. That is a guaranteed like that. It's always going to be disturbed, right? So That's the point, you know. No. As evidenced by just outside the window here, it's always disturbing, right? So they're just doing their, they're not disturbed, but I'm always disturbed. Like that, you know. Yeah, I am aware, yes. There are so many revealed scriptures, and they describe innumerable varieties of duties, right? Because there's so many duties, because the Shastra is saying the duties of everyone. Yeah, under all circumstances. So how all living entities can find out what's the duty, you know, like that. And so then you're going to have, you know, different grades, different this and that. And so, and it talks about everything. Like there's even duties for the outcasts, where they're involved in all this and that and stuff like that. Please select the essence of all these sacred texts and explain it to us for the good of all people, right? So you explain it to us for the good of all people. So it must be, they want to know, so it should be nicely presented and logical and all that. And at the same time, as it's for the good of all people, that everybody would be able to apply it. So now it gets down to the point, because details, different people can follow different details. But if you're saying for the good of everyone, that means the principle applies to everyone. right? So hinting at, so pure devotional service applies to every living entity. Every living entity has the qualifications for pure bhakti. They just have to take up the process and develop it. But for anything else, you have to have qualifications. Do you have the intelligence? Do you have the facility, the wealth, the physical energy, the, you know, the emotional, you know, qualities that you have, you know, whatever it is that you have, do you have that? And only then you can do the activity. But pure devotional service, you know, that's why Prabhupada's seeing, you know, even a child can do, even the dog can do, right? You know, you bring out something to eat, the dog is very happy to engage. The dog doesn't, you know, bring up questions to, you know, stop the possible process of engaging in the devotional service of how you say, I think it's what's it, the 10th one, bhojanam, you know, like that, you know, that, like that, is that they don't go as, you know, free range tofu, you know, is it, you know, what, was it, you know, fair trade? Was it? No, he just eats it, right? You know, very enthusiastic. You could say even spontaneous, right? You know, yeah. And so that their hearts may become fully satisfied. So how can their hearts become fully satisfied? Because on the platform of material duties, you can't be. It's only on transcendental duties. What's connected to Krishna? What's the relationship of the living entity with the Lord? You know, in a dynamic personal relationship, that can satisfy the heart, right? That is what can be good for all people. And it's explained very clearly, you know, and that is not in, so that, you know, the sages and those who want to analyze or rational, you know, it means use the analytical elements, and they can appreciate it, that it's logical, it's practical, it's like this. Yeah. In his purport to 1.1.10, Srila Prabhupada describes the fallen condition of the people in Kali Yuga. The people of this age are also very lazy, not only materially, but in the matter of self-realization, right? So it's not just the materially they may be lazy, but they're lazy spiritually. You know, like the other day, one devotee was telling me they got a book, or I think it was the father got a book and stuck it in his shelf. And at some point it ended up in the community library, and he has no idea how it happened, right? And then, you know, then this individual, then they found the book, and it was the same book that they had given their father, you know, X amount of years before. You know, and then they had the book, and then, you know, and then eventually after 15 years, the book got read, and then it was like, ooh, eureka, and like that. So that's the point, is what we tend to be, you know, it's not just materially lazy, but spiritually lazy as well. Right? You know, you could do, you know, it's like that, you know, Maharaj Katvanga, his example is so special because he surrendered in a moment. Right, so that means any living entity can do that, because Krishna is recommending in the Gita that, you know, the best process is to surrender fully to the Lord this moment, right? And that's his first recommendation, you know, because Arjuna wants to know what's the best thing to do. So that's the first recommendation. If you can't do that, then you take up the process of sadhana bhakti. Right? And then step by step, then you move through. If you can't do that, then basically engage in karma yoga, with an emphasis on the karma. You know, you're doing your duties and all that, and then you give the results to Krishna. Right? And if you can't do that, then, you know, open hospitals, be a nice guy, give in charity, you know, like that. Don't be selfish and self-centered and that. And then if you can't do that, then you could be, you know, an impersonalist. So in other words, the guy opening the hospitals is actually a more preferred position than being an impersonalist. But he says better than that is yoga, better than that, like that. And so he brings it back. So his first point is just surrender in that moment. So it can be done. But the general thing is because of this, of the living entities being tending to be a bit lazy about this, then you have the process of sadhana, which regulates and that, and you're exposed, right? Because if it was up to us, how much would we chant? You know, because like when you put in the thing, no, but it's up to the individual, and just whenever you feel, you chant and all that. How many rounds do they chant? Oh, but why rounds? Why are you restricting us? No, it just should be free and flowing from the heart and all that. But it's not, because you're not chanting. Yeah, it's about the quality, not the quantity. But the thing is Prabhupada wanted quality and quantity. And here they have non-quality and non-quantity. Yeah. So one has to, yeah, something to be worked on. Yeah, so that's what I mean. It's just we tend to think, oh, you know, how you say, we tend to follow the, you know, manyanavad. You know manyanavad? You mean, vad means the philosophy or like that. Manyana means tomorrow, right? I think it's, I'm not sure if it's in general in Spanish, but at least it's in Mexican Spanish.
No,
it's Spanish. Just general Spanish. Okay, so mañana. I don't know, maybe it's how that's said. I'm not sure if the Spanish would say mañana like that. Yeah, so it depends how close you are to the Rio Grande, you know, like that. So if you have a whole ocean separating you, they might say it differently like that. Like one devotee was telling me from South America, you know, because they speak Spanish, but then he met a devotee from Spain. And in his, when they were talking in Spanish, he was like, how this guy speaks, the Spanish guy, is like, in our books, it would be like what would be the language used like in the Bible or stuff like that. You know, it's like super elevated. Whoa. You know, like, you know, thou and thus and all these things. It's just, yeah. So whatever. So mañana means tomorrow. So then the point of the mañanavad is that you're going to do it tomorrow. But when tomorrow comes, it's today, and tomorrow is the next day. So tomorrow never comes. That's the point. Right? So that's the tendency. So here, that's the whole point, is that the you want to be very careful, because what happens is that the living entities might get caught up so much in all these, what do you call it? There are so many revealed scripture, they describe innumerable varieties of duties, and people think, oh, it's this and it's that, and they argue over this and fight. And so you just, what's the essence that everybody can agree on, everybody can deal with? And then it makes life simpler, because if your mind is focused, it's much easier to do something. If you think, I got to do all these 10 things like that, and, you know, what am I going to do? And there's this and that. But then if you're, you know, your mind is focused on one thing, you know, like a sandwich, then, you know, that will happen. You know, the other things might not happen. So that's the whole point of one point of determination, is that that's the Veda Vadarata. They have so many things going on that they get distracted. But when it's just pure devotional service, it's one pointed. And then according to the individual, what's the field you work in, those things are connected to Krishna, and wherever you are, it becomes very simple and straightforward, so they can be the max, they can be the most enthusiastic. So that's also the point there. So you can say, oh, we call you, we can't do all those things. But no one's saying you should do all those things. You're just saying those things that are connected with pure devotional service. And so if you understand what is pure devotional service, you have that value, then you can take up seriously the association of devotees. In other words, if you don't have faith in pure devotional service, that this is so important, you don't actually take advantage of the association of devotees. So that's one of the symptoms of those who can take up seriously are those who want pure devotional service, because you gain that in the association of devotees, right? And so then they want to be serious. So now you understand that that's the thing. What are the principles? It's about, you know, serving Krishna, those basic things. I'm the soul. I'm not the body. I'm servant of Krishna. The goal is to develop love for Krishna, please Krishna, and then develop love for him. And the process is through chanting the holy name and devotional activities that are given and supported. So then if that's understood, then you're going to say, okay, well, this activity is important. It's not just another rule, because this helps, you know, keep me, you know, the mind purified, or keep you on the how you say the devotional platform, or, you know, one's respectful to the devotees, or different things, whatever it is. Then you see that, what are all these rules? Otherwise, oh, it's so many rules. Because if you're dealing with someone who has no rules, any rule is a lot of rules, right? So that's the point, is that there's, so therefore, if you understand the principle, then those few rules that are there, then you see is how they're supportive, like that. You know, like if I say, okay, here's something to eat, and there's also, you know, here's salt and pepper, here's some, here's a nice, whatever it is, you know, sauce or chutney that goes with it. Oh, so many things are so confusing. Why can't you have to make it so difficult? And, you know, why is it like this? And so, no, it's just, the point is in eating this, then there's a nice flavor, and then you can bring out the flavor by that. If you feel it doesn't have a full enough flavor, the salt is there. If you feel it's just a little bit, you know, more rich, you can put the pepper. If you want to bring out more kind of, you know, general flavors or background, then there's the chutneys and all that. So if you understand it's about flavor, then it doesn't matter that there's all these things. But if you, you know, it's just about stuffing in your mouth, what do you call it? Wolfing it down, you know, like you see dogs, they just get it in their mouth. It means the first bite is to get it. Then they put it into the mouth. Then they swallow it. They don't even chew. I don't think dogs chew like that. It's not that it's not high on their list. I don't think it's on their list. Cows, they chew. But dogs, they don't chew. So if you have a dog and you say chew, then they don't sit there and start masticating nicely. They go chase something else that they think that you want them to chase. Right? Yeah? Human life is especially meant for self-realization. That is to say, man should come to know what he is, what the world is, and what the supreme truth is, right? So yourself, the world, and the supreme and the supreme truth. So you see, you say what he is, what the world is, and what the supreme truth is, right? Prabhupada is saying that's what he has to study. Now, of the supreme truth, then you have gradations. You have Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. And then in Bhagavan, you have Vishnu, you know, Narayan, then you have Krishna, right? So then you're seeing that all this is there, right? Human life is a means by which the living entity can end all the miseries of the hard struggle for life in material existence, and by which he can return to Godhead, his eternal home. But due to a bad system of education, men have no desire for self-realization. Even if they come to know about it, they unfortunately become victims of misguided teachers. So even if they hear about it, they're off. You know, people, oh yeah, no, but we should know about the Lord and hear about his name, form, qualities, and pastimes, and they're off the radical. No, it's just somewhere, or, you know, how you say the, you know, elderly, very popular Indian guru who wears white in a turban and rides a motorcycle. Sadhguru, yeah. You know, so like that, or they often, you know, oh, he says nice stuff. And you know, so many people say nice stuff. I even heard there's one, I can't remember, he's a Brajavasi, kind of one of the gurus, you know, in the outside scene. And oh, he's there, and you know. And then, you know, so many devotees are, you know, him, and you know, it's all the rasa and all that. And then I think there was some program, some general program like that, and you know, big conference kind of thing, and there were all these Shankara sannyasis and you know like big time Mayavadi guys like that. And then when this you know Vrindavan guy spoke, you know, this guru spoke, then he mentioned about how they're the real thing and everything like that. And then afterwards, the devotee, what, you're saying the Mayavadis are? No, I just, you know, I was there with them. I had to praise them and all that. So you understand the guy's bogus. So that's what Prabhupada says, then become misguided teachers. You know, so that's the point, is that then you have to hear in the line the of Suta Goswami that's coming down to us and is given to us, because it comes down the thing, down the tree, like it said, the ripened mango is coming down, and so it's handed to us by Srila Prabhupada, and then his assistants, then they help us to understand what he said, but we're getting the mango from him. We don't jump over and say, oh, we don't need, but we'll go directly, because anybody who's tried that, it hasn't worked out for any of them. You know, there's examples of devotees who think, oh, just Jiva Goswami, we'll just, you know, like that, and it doesn't work out well, you know. Or, you know, Prabhupada sends you here, but, you know, according to the dictionary, you would translate it like this and all that. I mean, some devotee was telling me that they remember seeing they came across it, one of the brahmacharis there. Then he had learned some Sanskrit for whatever reason. Maybe he's going to help the BBT or something. You know, this was back in the like 70s or 80s, like that. And then he had gone through Prabhupada's Gita and you know, the places where, you know, how he gave translate. No, it should be like this according to the dictionary. And like that. And he didn't, he also then, you know, spun out, you know. So you just see us whenever they do those things, whatever it is that the sages are saying, why we're going to use Sutta and not to these others, then whenever these things happen, then it never works out. That's you know, that's the thing to learn, is that there's the principle, what's good for advancing devotional service as given by the acharyas, because you're going to follow them. You know, there's no guarantee these other guys are connected. But Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, right? So it must be in the same, this 9 to 11, so 110. So then, oh, honorable sage, you who know what is suitable for time and place, right? In Kali Yuga, people are generally short-lived, right? So suitable for time and place means you're still taking the actual thing and then explaining it or applying it so it applies to the time and place. When you say, oh, time, place, circumstance, that doesn't mean you throw out the principles and what you're trying to do. Like, just like, let's say you're hungry, you want to eat. So time, place, circumstance, then you look at what's available, but it's still going to be food that's edible for you. Right? It's not that, oh, now we'll go, you know, chew on a table leg or something like that. I mean, you, like, let's say you have a book. You know, one of the problems with the books is they get bookworms and they get, you know, moths that come and eat them and that. So they love to eat books. That doesn't mean when you're hungry, then you get out of something and start chewing on it like that. And, you know, or if you want, you know, you get the newspaper. That's the advantage of the newspaper. See, that's the problem with the modern thing of being digital and all that. You can't actually eat it. Well, if a newspaper, you could roll it up, you know, like a burrito, and then start chewing on it. You know, so it means it has its advantages. You know, I don't think they thought this out so well, right? And if anyone comes to try to take it from you because it's rolled up, you can whack it with it and go back to eating like that. No? Yeah. So we have to understand, because otherwise this time, place, circumstance is used by many to just write off anything. The Vedas said, Prabhupada said, oh, but time, place, circumstance, it doesn't apply. It's like, okay, so what's the time? What's the place? What's the circumstance? And most likely anybody who says, oh, time, place, circumstance doesn't apply, they can't define these. Okay, we're sitting in Mayapur. Oh, but time, place, circumstances. So what's the place? We're in Mayapur. No, but you know, in Kali Yuga, we're in Mayapur. We're not in New York. We're not in London. You can do these things. Right? And the place, this is the time of day. You're not taking a bath. You're not asleep at night. So yes, you can wear, you know, the regular clothes, and you're in Mayapur, and the circumstance, who are you? So what would you wear? Okay, being a grihastha, you're going to wear this, or if they're brahmachari, they're going to wear that, or if they're, let's say, washing pots, then they might put on a gumsha, or they're doing puja, then they'll wear the clothes in a different way. That's circumstance. You and how you connect to that time and place. That's the meaning, but what to do? In Kali Yuga, people are generally short-lived. If they have long life by chance, then they are lazy to investigate spiritual topics, right? You know, because they retire to go, you know, on, you know, a world cruise. Like I was seeing something that someone was talking about that it's actually cheaper to go on endless world cruises on these ships than it is to, you know, rent a place, have a car, pay all the bills, do all the different things. So you have this older couple that's what they do. They're just permanently on a ship somewhere, and you know, they save money.
So tam je taky fronta.
Yeah, no, you could also do like that, and you can say, it's not limited. It's not that you have to be an old person to do it, but the point is that that's what they do instead of, it's not that they're on the boat, stay in their room, and then study Bhagavad Gita and everything like that. No, they're just out there, you know, playing. Yeah, yeah, they're out cruising, right? You know. Okay. Okay, they have long life by chance, then they are lazy to investigate spiritual topics. Even if someone is not lazy, then he is unintelligent. Even if someone is intelligent, he is unfortunate, for he is devoid of association with devotees to teach the highest actions. Even if someone has that association of devotees, he is afflicted, under the control of affliction from sickness and other problems. He does not get the time to hear from the mouth of the devotee. Or even if he does hear, he cannot discern the highest goal for the human being and then carry out actions to attain it. Or the sequence of qualities can mean that all people have all the bad qualities. You can say, okay, he doesn't have this, but then there'll be this. And if he hasn't, even if he had that, no, then this. Or it's saying, or it can mean that you have this sequence that it goes through, or it can mean they have all those bad qualities. You know, so I mean, we're broad minded, we're open, you know, people can have all the bad qualities. Yeah, we're not saying that no, it's Kali Yuga, you can't have any of these bad qualities. No, you can have so we're you know, no, that's just, you know, yeah, you know. I think what's the saying, you do you, you know, yeah. Like that. So basically, you know, he's making it, the point is that there's so many things that are there. So people don't have, they can't do all these big things before. It's like, you know, meditation means you have, I've generally seen, basically there's those, oh, I mean, well, what is his name? I mean, yeah, the general time of that you see the Bhagavatam talking about when somebody went and did meditation, it's generally 60,000 years. Then they become, and I think that, I'm not sure if there's not one that was 50, like that. There's a few that are 10, but it's still 10,000 years, you know, like that. You know, nowadays they think, you know, let's go to the yoga studio, sit there, and for, if they did, yeah, you know, that would be like, woo, you know. But, you know, no, 10,000 years, you know. And then, okay, Dhruva Maharaj, he did it in, I think, 6 months. But then he also stopped breathing and eating and everything like that, you know. And so, yeah. So, and I think he stood on one leg, I think, at one point. I think he was doing some far out asana like that. Yeah. Yeah. So, because you can't do that. You're not going to be able to do the big yajnas. I mean, it's just to do, Manu's mentioning to do, I think the Soma Yajna, you have to have 3 years of grain, means what you would need. And we're talking about a rich person. So a rich person is not just him. The rich person means his family, his assistants, everything. And, you know, all the different things he's going to be giving in charity. So what he would require for 3 years is how much grain you're going to use in that yajna, that time, because you're going to be feeding, like Yudhishthira Maharaj doing the Rajastuya, he's feeding 100,000 Brahmins at one sitting, and that's going on from the whole day, all day. So you can understand, you know, millions of people, because technically they could eat in 15 minutes, but you're going to clean and all that. So, you know, so let's say three times, you know, whatever it is, or even twice in an hour. So, you know, you're going to have millions that he's feeding. That's just them. And he's not just giving them, you know, a little cup with kitchery in it and they walk off. That's full meals, because his order was feed them till they laugh. So that means, one, there has to be, the service is good. The volume is good. The quality of the ingredients is good. You know, like that. So the arrangements are good. So that's serious management. And that was just the food. Then it's all these kings from all over the world. And Yudhishthira Maharaj had a way to invite the demigods. It's not that they just crashed the party. He actually invited them. So he's invited Brahma and Indra and, you know, all the different personalities like that. He's invited them, and they have come. So they're staying there for some time, because it's not that it's just, you know, sit down at 7 o'clock, you start, and by, you know, 7:30, you're finished, and then have a little kirtan, and then everyone goes to Prashad and Hari Bal. They're staying there for the length of that program. So that means he has to have places for, you know, all these demigods, all these kings. And the demigods might come on their own. They might bring a few people. When the king comes, they bring an entourage, because they're not just going to walk down the road themselves, or, you know, catch a, you know, a little bicycle and ride through the, you know, the, what do you call that? The scooter, the, you know, the French countryside, you know, and that, and, you know, that, and that idyllic thing, like kind of thing like that. No, they're going to come with this whole, they're going to bring their armies. They're going to bring their ministers, are going to bring their families, they're going to bring, you know, everybody comes that he has to take care of. So just that kind of, that's another full arrangement. That's why he had Bhima. He only took care of the cooking. He just took care of the kitchen, right? And then Krishna just took care of, I think, taking care of the shoes. Not even welcoming the guests, taking care of just the guests' shoes. Because they're going to walk into the arena, they got to put their shoes somewhere, right? You know, it's not that they think, oh, okay, so many people, maybe they'll get stolen, so I'll leave my shoes in my room. No, they come with their shoes, and they got to keep. Then I think it was Nakula, then he would greet them, and he has to know who everybody is and that, then take them in, right? Then when he gets in, then he hands them over to Sahadev, right? And Sahadev has to seat them all. Right, because knowing who they are and talking appropriately, but then who sits next to who? You can't stick. You know, you have to be careful who you sit. You don't want a war to start. You know why you're having your program like that. You know, and so each one just did one thing. You know, each one of them could be emperor of the world, but they took one thing to make sure it's done perfectly. Right. And so that's there. And we haven't even gotten to the, you know, the yajna yet, and the whole ceremony and that. Like, but when you're doing a proper soma yajna, there it takes 90 Brahmins. That's not 90 positions. No, that's 90 at once. It's not that, okay, some do here and you do all that, and then get up and walk over here and sit down and then do something. No, it's 90. Like that. And so, you know, you're talking about some serious stuff. And so, yeah, this is not the age for doing that. I mean, as it is, it's just amazing if anybody, you know, just does some basic things, then you're thinking, oh, that's very nice. Right. And so then, and then in Dwapara, then the deity worship, they do all the rules, you know, everything is there. And the opulence, like Prabhupada mentions, they would one bhog offering is offered on gold plates, and that gold plate's not used again. They use a new one for that. So whether they're taking them, melting them down and making new ones, or they're distributing them to the Brahmins and all that. So you can see what kind of wealth is going on. The people are giving so much wealth. They have wealth, and people are donating wealth, that you can do that. You know, that's the kind of thing, you know. So, you know, and also it's that in the Treta, if in a yajna one syllable is wrong, the whole yajna is finished. You know, it's not that, you know, yeah, it's just you have to, everything has to be, that means everyone's perfectly trained, everyone's this, that. So, no, it's not happening. So, therefore, in Kali Yuga, you don't have all those qualifications, you don't have all the facilities, you don't have all the anything like that. And so what you have is, you know, what is it? basically, you know, munda sumunda matayo munda bhagya. It means that's what we have. I mean, that's our, you know, that's what we have to work with. And so then that's why the sages want to know what's the essence, what actually is something that everybody can do, and get the highest benefit. So here's the interesting thing is you have the least qualification, but you can get the highest benefit. So what could do that? Because you see, as others take such qualifications, you can do amazing things. But here's something that you can do with the least qualifications, but get the highest result that's there. That's what the sages are asking. That's the significance of Srimad Bhagavatam. Yes? No? Very good? Okay. So we'll end here. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jainitai Gaur Premanandi. I think we forgot to chant Hare Krishna, right? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.